appearance. The phone call to Jordan from the Prater, their frantic drive to Long Island, the discovery of the Prater in ruins. That cleared his throat. I do have some of Jordan's things. His keys, his Prater pendant. Maya felt as if she couldn't catch a breath. No, I don't want his things, she said. He would have wanted Simon to have the pendant. When we find Simon, he should have it. Bat didn't push the issue. I do have some good news, he said. We heard from Idris. Your friend Simon's all right. He's there, actually, with the Shadow Hunters. Oh. Maya felt the tight knot around her heart loosen slightly with relief. I should have told you right away, he apologized. It's just I was worried about you. You were in bad shape when we brought you back to headquarters. You've been sleeping since then.
I wanted to sleep forever.
I know you already told Magnus, added Bat, his face strained. But explain it to me again why Sebastian Morgenstern would target lycanthropes.
He said it was a message.
Maya heard the flatness in her own voice as if from a distance.
He wanted us to know that it was because werewolves are allies with the Shadow Hunters, that this was what he planned to do to all the Nephilim allies. I'll never pause again. Never stand still till either death hath closed these eyes of mine or fortune given me measure of revenge.
New York is empty of Shadow Hunters now, and Luke is in Idris with them. They're putting up extra wards. Soon we'll barely be able to get messages in and out.
Bat shifted in his chair. Maya sensed there was something he wasn't telling her.
What is it? She said. His eyes darted away.
Bat?
Do you know Rufus Hastings?
Rufus.
Maya remembered the first time she'd been to the Prater Lupus. A scarred face, an angry man exiting Prater Scott's office in a rage.
Not really.
He survived the massacre. He's here in the station with us. He's been filling us in, said Bat. And he's been talking to the others about Luke, saying that he's more of a Shadow Hunter than a lycanthrope, that he doesn't have pack loyalty, that the pack needs a new leader now.
You're the leader, she said. You're second in command.
Yeah, and I was put in that position by Luke. That means I can't be trusted either.
Maya slid to the edge of the bed. Her whole body ached. She felt it as she put her bare feet on the cold stone floor. No one's listening to him, are they?
Bat shrugged. That's ridiculous. After what's happened, we need to be unified, not to have someone trying to split us up. Shadowhunters are our allies. Which is why Sebastian targeted us.
He'd target us anyway. He's no friend to Downworlders. He's Valentine Morgenstern's son.
Her eyes burned. He might be trying to get us to abandon the Nephilim temporarily so he can go after them, but if he managed to wipe them off the Earth, all he'd do is come for us next.
Bat clasped and unclasped his hands, then seemed to come to a decision.
I know you're right, he said, and went over to a table in the corner of the room. He returned with a jacket for her, socks and boots. He handed them over. Just do me a favor and don't say anything like that this afternoon. Emotions are going to be running pretty high as it is.
She shrugged the jacket on.
This afternoon?
What's this afternoon?
He sighed. The funeral, he said.
I'm going to kill Maureen, Isabel said. She had both doors of Alec's wardrobe open and was flinging clothes onto the floor in heaps. Simon was lying barefoot on one of the beds. Jace's? Alex, having kicked off his alarming buckled boots. Though his skin didn't really bruise, it felt amazing to be on a soft surface after having spent so many hours on the hard, dirty floor of the Dumort. You'll have to fight your way through all the vampires of New York to do it, he said. Apparently they love her. No accounting for taste. Isabel held up a dark blue sweater Simon recognized as Alex, mostly from the holes in the cuffs. So Raphael brought you here, so you could talk to my dad? Simon propped himself up on his elbows to watch her. Do you think that'll be okay? Sure, why not? My dad loves talking. She sounded bitter. Simon leaned forward, but when she raised her head, she was smiling at him, and he thought he must have imagined it. although who knows what will happen with the attack on the Citadel tonight. She worried at her lower lip. It could mean they cancel the meeting, or move it earlier. Sebastian's obviously a bigger problem than they thought. He shouldn't even be able to get that close to the Citadel. Well, Simon said, he is a shadow hunter. No, he's not, Isabel said fiercely, and yanked a green sweater down from a wooden hanger. Besides, he's a man. Sorry, Simon said. It must be nerve-wracking, waiting to see how the battle turns out. How many people did they let through? 50 or 60, Isabel said. I wanted to go, but they wouldn't let me. She had the guarded tone in her voice that meant they were closing in on a subject she didn't want to talk about. I would have worried about you, he said. He saw her mouth quirk into a reluctant smile. Try this on, she said, and tossed him the green sweater, slightly less frayed than the rest. Are you sure it's okay for me to borrow clothes? You can't go around like that, she said. You look like you escaped from a romance novel. Isabel laid a hand dramatically against her forehead. Oh, Lord Montgomery, what do you mean to do with me in this bedroom when you have me all alone? An innocent maiden, and unprotected. She unzipped her jacket and tossed it to the floor, revealing a white tank top. She gave him a sultry look. Is my virtue safe? I, what? Simon said, temporarily deprived of vocabulary. I know you are a dangerous man, Isabel declared, sashaying toward the bed. She unzipped her trousers and kicked them to the floor. She was wearing black boy shorts underneath. Some call you a rake. Everybody knows you are a devil with the ladies with your poetically puffed shirt and irresistible pants. She pounced under the bed and crawled over to him, eyeing him like a cobra considering making a snack out of a mongoose. I pray you will consider my innocence, she breathed, and my poor, vulnerable heart. Simon decided this was a lot like role-playing in D&D, but potentially much more fun. Lord Montgomery considers nothing but his own desires, he said in a gravelly voice. I'll tell you something else. Lord Montgomery has a very large estate, and pretty extensive grounds, too. Isabel giggled, and Simon felt the bed shake under them. Okay, I didn't expect you to get quite so into this. Lord Montgomery always surpasses expectations, Simon said, seizing Isabel around the waist and rolling her over so she was beneath him, her black hair spread out onto the pillow. Mothers, lock up your daughters. Then lock up your maidservants. Then lock up yourselves. Lord Montgomery is on the prowl. Isabel framed his face between her hands. My lord, she said, her eyes shining, I fear I can no longer withstand your manly charms and virile ways. Please, do with me as you will. Simon wasn't sure what Lord Montgomery would do, but he knew what he wanted to do. He bent down and pressed a lingering kiss to her mouth. Her lips parted under his, and suddenly everything was all sweet, dark heat, and Isabel's lips brushing over his. First teasing, then harder. She smelled, as she always did, dizzyingly of roses and blood. He pressed his lips to the pulse point at her throat, mouthing over it gently, not biting. And Izzy gasped. Her hands went to the front of his shirt. He was momentarily concerned about its lack of buttons, but Isabel grasped the material in her strong hands and ripped the shirt in half, leaving it dangling off his shoulders.
Goodness! That stuff rips like paper! She exclaimed, reaching to pull her tank top off.
She was halfway through the action when the door opened and Alec walked into the room.
Izzy, are you... he began. His eyes flew wide, and he backed up fast enough to smack his head into the wall behind him.
What is he doing here?
Isabel tugged her tank top back down and glared at her brother.
You don't knock now?
It's my bedroom,
Alec spluttered. He seemed to be deliberately trying not to look at Izzy and Simon, who were indeed in a very compromising position. Simon rolled quickly off Isabel, who sat up, brushing herself off, as if for lint. Simon sat up more slowly, trying to hold the torn edges of his shirt together.
Why are all my clothes on the floor? Alec said.
I was trying to find something for Simon to wear, Isabel explained. Maureen put him in leather pants and a puffy shirt because he was being her romance novel slave. He was being her what? Her romance novel slave, Isabel repeated, as if Alec were being particularly dense. Alec shook his head as if he were having a bad dream. You know what? Don't explain. Just put your clothes on, both of you. You're not going to leave, are you? Isabel said in a sulky tone, sliding off the bed. She picked up her jacket and shrugged it on, then tossed Simon the green sweater. He happily swapped it for the poet shirt, which was in ribbons anyway. No, it's my room. And besides, I need to talk to you, Isabel. Alec's voice was terse. Simon grabbed up jeans and shoes from the floor and went into the bathroom to change, deliberately taking plenty of time with it. When he came back out, Isabel was sitting on the rumpled bed, looking strained and tense. So they're opening the portal back up to bring everyone through. Good. It is good. But what I felt... Alec put his hand unconsciously over his upper arm, near his Parabontai rune. That isn't good. Jace isn't dead, he hastened to add as Isabel paled. I would know if he were. But something happened. Something with the heavenly fire, I think. Do you know if he's okay now? And Clary? Isabel demanded. Wait, back up, Simon interrupted. What's this about Clary? And Jace? They went through the portal, Isabel said grimly. To the battle at the Citadel. Simon realized he had unconsciously reached for the gold ring on his right hand and was gripping it with his fingers. Aren't they too young? They didn't exactly have permission. Alec was leaning back against the wall. He looked tired, the shadows under his eyes bruised blue. The consul tried to stop them, but she didn't have time. Simon turned on Isabel. And you didn't tell me? Isabel wouldn't meet his eyes. I knew you'd freak out. Alec was looking from Isabel to Simon. You didn't tell him, he said, about what happened at the god? Isabel crossed her arms over her chest and looked defiant. No, I bumped into him in the street, and we came upstairs, and it's none of your business. It is if you do it in my bedroom, said Alec. If you're going to use Simon to make yourself forget you're angry and upset, fine, but do it in your own room. I wasn't using him. Simon thought about Isabel's eyes, shining when she'd seen him standing in the street. He'd thought it was happiness, but he realized now it had more likely been unshed tears. The way she'd been walking toward him, her head down, her shoulders curved in, as if she'd been holding herself together. You were, though, he said, or you would have told me what happened. You didn't even mention Clary or Jace, or that you were worried or anything. He felt his stomach clench, as he realized how deftly Isabel had deflected his questions and distracted him with kissing, and he felt stupid. He'd thought she was glad to see him specifically, but maybe he could have been anyone. Isabel's face had gone very still. Please, she said. It's not like you asked. She had been fiddling with her hair. Now she reached up and began twisting it, almost savagely, into a knot on the back of her head. If you're both going to stand there blaming me, maybe you should just go. I'm not blaming you, Simon began. But Isabel was already on her feet. She snatched the ruby pendant, pulled it none too gently over his head, and dropped it back around her own neck. I never should have given it to you, she said, her eyes bright. It saved my life, Simon said. That made her pause. Simon, she whispered. She broke off as Alec suddenly clutched at his shoulder with a gasp. He slid to the floor. Isabel ran to him and knelt down by his side. Alec? Alec! Her voice rose, tinged with panic. Alec pushed aside his jacket, shoved the collar down on his shirt, and craned to see the mark on his shoulder. Simon recognized the outlines of the Parabatai rune. Alec pressed his fingers to it. They came away smudged with something dark that looked like a smear of ash. They've come back through the portal, he said. And there's something wrong with Jace. It was like returning to a dream or a nightmare. After the mortal war, Angel Square had been full of bodies. Shadowhunter bodies, laid out in neat rows, each corpse with its eyes bound in the white silk of death. There were bodies in the square again, but this time there was also chaos. The demon towers were shining down a brilliant light on the scene that greeted Simon when, having followed Isabel and Alec through the winding streets of Alicante, he finally reached the Hall of Accords. The square was full of people. Nephilim in gear lay on the ground, some writhing in pain and calling out, some alarmingly still. The Accords Hall itself was dark and shut tight. One of the larger stone buildings on the square was open and blazing with lights, double doors thrown wide. A stream of shadow hunters was going in and out. Isabel had risen up on tiptoe and was scanning the crowd anxiously. Simon followed her gaze. He could make out a few familiar figures. The consul, moving anxiously among her people. Kadir, from the New York Institute. Silent Brothers, in their parchment robes, directing people wordlessly toward the lighted building. "The Vasilius is open," Isabel said to a haggard-looking Alec. "They might have taken Jason there, if he was hurt."
"He was hurt," Alec said shortly.
"The Vasilius?" Simon asked.
"The hospital," Isabel said,
indicating the lighted building. Simon could feel her thrumming with nervous, panicked energy.
We should...
"I'll go with you," Simon said. She shook her head.
"Shadow hunters only."
Alec said,
"Isabel, come on."
He was holding the shoulder marked by his Parabatai rune stiffly. Simon wanted to say something to him, wanted to say that his best friend had also gone into the battle and was also missing, wanted to say that he understood. But maybe you could only understand Parabatai if you were a shadow hunter. He doubted Alec would thank him for saying he understood. Rarely had Simon felt so keenly the divide between Nephilim and those who were not Nephilim. Isabel nodded and followed her brother without another word. Simon watched them go across the square, past the statue of the angel, looking down on the aftermath of the battle with sad marble eyes. They went up the front steps of the Basilius and were lost to even his vampire sight. "Do you think," said a soft voice at his shoulder, "that they would mind much if we fed on their dead?" It was Raphael. His curly hair was a must halo around his head, and he wore only a thin t-shirt and jeans. He looked like a child. "The blood of the recently deceased is not my favorite vintage," he went on, "but it is better than bottled blood. Would you not agree?" "You have an incredibly charming personality," said Simon. "I hope someone's told you that." Raphael snorted. "Sarcasm," he said. "Tedious." Simon made an uncontrollable, exasperated noise.
"You go ahead, then. Feed on the Nephilim dead. I'm sure they're really in the mood for that. They might let you live 5, 10 seconds even."
Raphael chuckled. "It looks worse than it is," he said. "There are not so many dead, quite a lot injured. They were overmatched. They will not forget now what it means to fight the Indarkened." Simon narrowed his eyes. "What do you know about the Indarkened, Raphael?"
"Whispers and shadows," said Raphael. "But I make it my business to know things."
"Then if you know things, tell me where Jace and Clary are," said Simon, without a lot of hope. Raphael was rarely helpful unless it was useful to him. "Jace is in the Basilius," said Raphael, to Simon's surprise. It appears the heavenly fire in his veins was finally too much for him. He nearly destroyed himself, and one of the Silent Brothers along with him.
"What?"
Simon's anxiety sharpened from the general to the specific. "Is he going to live? Where's Clary?" Raphael cast him a look out of dark, long-lashed eyes. His smile was lopsided. "It does not do for vampires to fret overmuch for the lives of mortals."
"I swear to God, Raphael, if you don't start being more helpful."
"Very well, then. Come with me." Raphael moved farther into the shadows, keeping to the inside edge of the square. Simon hurried to catch up with him. He caught sight of a blonde head and a dark head bent together, Aline and Helen, tending to one of the wounded, and thought for a moment of Alec and Jace. "If you are wondering what would happen if you drank Jace's blood now, the answer is that it would kill you," said Raphael. Vampires and heavenly fire do not mix. Yes, even you, Daylighter. I wasn't wondering that, Simon scowled. I was wondering what happened at the battle. Sebastian attacked the adamant citadel, said Raphael, moving around a tight knot of shadowhunters, where the weapons of the shadowhunters are forged. The place of the Iron Sisters. He tricked the Clave into believing he had a force of only 20 with him, when in fact he had more. He would have killed them all and taken the citadel, most likely, if not for your Jace. He isn't my Jace. And Clary, said Raphael, as if Simon hadn't spoken. Though I do not know the details, only what I have overheard, and there seems much confusion among the Nephilim themselves as to what happened. How did Sebastian manage to trick them into thinking he had fewer warriors than he did? Raphael shrugged a thin shoulder. Shadowhunters forget sometimes that not all magic is theirs. The Citadel is built on ley lines. There is old magic, wild magic, that existed before Jonathan Shadowhunter, and will exist again. He broke off, and Simon followed his gaze. For a moment, Simon saw only a sheet of blue light. Then it subsided, and he saw Clary lying on the ground. He heard a roaring sound in his ears like rushing blood. She was white and still, her fingers and mouth tinged a dark bluish purple. Her hair hung in lank straggles around her face, and her eyes were circled with shadows. She wore torn and bloody gear, and by her hand lay a Morgenstern sword, its blade stamped with stars. Magnus was leaning over, his hand on her cheek, the tips of his fingers glowing blue. Jocelyn and Luke knelt on the other side of Clary. Jocelyn looked up and saw Simon. Her lips shaped his name. He couldn't hear anything over the roaring in his ears. Was Clary dead? She looked dead, or nearly. He started forward, but Luke was already on his feet, reaching for Simon. He caught at Simon's arms, pulled him back from where Clary lay on the ground. Simon's vampire nature gave him unnatural strength. Strength he'd barely learned how to use yet, but Luke was just as strong. His fingers dug into Simon's upper arms. "What happened?" Simon said, his voice rising. "Raphael!" He whipped around to look for the vampire, but Raphael was gone. He had melted into the shadows. "Please," Simon said to Luke, looking from his familiar face to Clary. "Let me..." "Simon, no," Magnus barked. He was tracing his fingertips over Clary's face, leaving blue sparks in their wake. She didn't move or react. This is delicate. Her energy is extremely low. "Shouldn't she be in the Basileus?" Simon demanded, looking over at the hospital building. Light was still pouring from it, and to his surprise he saw Alex standing on the steps. He was staring at Magnus. Before Simon could move or signal to him, Alec turned abruptly and went back inside the building. "Magnus," Simon began. "Simon, shut up," Magnus said through gritted teeth. Simon twisted out of Luke's grasp, only to trip and fetch up against the side of a stone wall. "But Clary," he started. Luke looked haggard, but his expression was firm. "Clary exhausted herself making a healing rune, but she's not wounded, her body's whole, and Magnus can help her better than the Silent Brothers can. The best thing you can do is stay out of the way." "Jace," Simon said. Alec felt something happen to him through the Parabatai bond. Something to do with the heavenly fire. And Raphael was babbling about ley lines. "Look, the battle was bloodier than the Nephilim expected. Sebastian wounded Jace, but the heavenly fire rebounded on him somehow. He nearly destroyed Jace as well. Clary saved Jace's life, but there's still work for the brothers to do, healing him." Luke looked at Simon with tired blue eyes. "And why were you with Isabel and Alec? I thought you were going to stay behind in New York. Did you come because of Jordan?" The name brought Simon up short. "Jordan? What does he have to do with anything?" For the first time, Luke seemed truly taken aback. "You don't know?"
"Know what?"
Luke hesitated a long moment. Then he said, "I have something for you. Magnus brought it from New York." He reached into his pocket and drew out a medallion on a chain. The medallion was gold, stamped with a wolf's paw and a Latin inscription, Beati Bellicosi. Blessed are the warriors. Simon knew it instantly. Jordan's Praetor Lupus pendant. It was flaked and stained with blood, dark red like rust. It clung to the chain and the medallion's face. But if anyone knew what was rust and what was blood, it was a vampire. "I don't understand," Simon said. The roaring was back in his ears again. "Why do you have this? Why are you giving it to me?" "Because Jordan wanted you to have it," said Luke. "Wanted?" Simon's voice rose. "Don't you mean once?" Luke took a deep breath. "I'm sorry, Simon. Jordan's dead."
9. The Arms You Bear. Clary woke to the fading afterimage of a rune against her closed eyelids, a rune like wings connected by a single bar. Her whole body hurt, and for a moment she lay still, afraid of the pain that moving would bring. Memories crept back slowly. The icy lava plain in front of the citadel, Armitage laughing and daring Clary to hurt her, Jace cutting his way through a field of the Undarkened, Jace on the ground, bleeding fire, Brother Zachariah lurching back from the blaze. Her eyes flew open. She had half expected to wake up somewhere entirely foreign, but instead she was lying in the small wooden bed in Armitage's spare room. Pale sunshine poured through the lace curtains, making patterns on the ceiling. She began to struggle to sit up. Near her, someone had been singing softly, her mother. Jocelyn broke off immediately and leaped up to lean over her. She looked as if she had been up all night. She was wearing an old shirt and jeans, and her hair was scraped back into a bun with a pencil stuck through it. A wash of familiarity and relief went through Clary, quickly followed by panic. "Mom?" she said as Jocelyn leaned over her, pressing the back of her hand to Clary's forehead as if checking for fever. Jace is fine," Jocelyn said, taking her hand away. At Clary's suspicious look, Jocelyn shook her head. "He really is. He's in the Basilius now, along with Brother Zachariah. He's recovering." Clary looked at her mother hard. "Clary, I know I've given you reason not to trust me in the past, but please believe me, Jace is perfectly all right. I know you'd never forgive me if I didn't tell you the truth about him." "When can I see him?" "Tomorrow." Jocelyn sat back on the chair beside the bed, revealing Luke, who had been leaning against the wall of the bedroom. He smiled at Clary, a sad, loving, protective smile. "Luke," she said, relieved to see him. "Tell Mom I'm fine. I can go to the Basilius." Luke shook his head. "Sorry, Clary, no visitors for Jace right now. Besides, today you have to rest. We heard what you did with that Aradzi at the Citadel. Or at least what people saw you do. I'm not sure I'll ever understand it exactly." The lines at the corners of Jocelyn's mouth deepened. "You've nearly killed yourself healing Jace, Clary. You're going to have to be careful. You don't have endless reserves of energy." "He was dying," Clary interrupted. "He was bleeding fire. I had to save him." "You shouldn't have had to." Jocelyn tossed a stray lock of red hair out of her eyes. "What were you doing at that battle?" "They weren't sending enough people through," Clary said in a subdued tone. "And everyone was talking about how when they got there, they were going to rescue the Undarkened, they were going to bring them back, find a cure, but I was at the Burren." "You were too, Mom. You know there's no rescuing the Nephilim that Sebastian's taken with the Infernal Cup." "Did you see my sister?" Luke said, his voice gentle. Clary swallowed and nodded. "I'm sorry. She's Sebastian's lieutenant. She's not herself anymore, not even a little bit." "Did she hurt you?" Luke demanded. His voice was still calm, but a muscle jumped in his cheek. Clary shook her head. She couldn't bring herself to speak, to lie. But she couldn't tell Luke the truth either. "It's all right," he said, misunderstanding her distress. "The Armitage that is serving Sebastian is no more my sister than the Jace who served Sebastian was the boy you loved. No more my sister than Sebastian is the son your mother ought to have had." Jocelyn put out her hand, took Luke's, and kissed the back of it lightly. Clary averted her eyes. Her mother turned back to her a moment later. "God, the Clave, if only they would listen." She blew out her frustrated breath. "Clary, we understand why you did what you did last night, but we thought you were safe.
Then Helen showed up on our doorstep and told us you'd been injured in the Citadel battle. I nearly had a heart attack when we found you in the square.